Cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. All right, so the NFL continuing its preseason schedule. Of course, we're going into week number three for all of the teams except for Atlanta and Denver. Last night, the Broncos played San Francisco. Jimmy Garoppolo didn't look all that good, but at least he left the game healthy, and that really, in the end, is all that matters. College football being kicking off this weekend with a couple of games on the schedule, including Florida and Miami and Orlando. One story that I saw yesterday, and I was drawn to it, and I was just drawn to the situation. I'm not a big, this really puts it all in perspective kind of person, because I really think most of us, and I think if you have a family, if you have kids, if you have a wife, etc., you pretty much have your life in perspective. I know there are some people who put sports in a level of way too much importance, but I think most of us have a good handle on a balance of family, work, and how sports integrates into our entertainment life. But Arkansas head coach Blake Anderson is taking a leave of absence from the Red Wolves football program because his wife has been diagnosed with cancer for the second time in 3 years. She's battling this for the second time in 3 years. He is stepping away from the game to take care of his wife, because we know that, you know, being a coach on the college level, even at a place like Arkansas State out of the Sun Belt, is still a job that requires 16, 17 hour days, whatever it is, the amount of time you put into it. It's nonstop recruiting. You're still in a program that you're going to put a lot of effort and work into it, because eventually you'd like to become the head coach at Arkansas rather than Arkansas State. Nevertheless, Dave Dugan is the defensive coordinator, and he's going to take over. And like I said before, I think this has been getting a lot of praise from people on Twitter and across the coaching realm, wishing him and his family all the best. But it just puts into perspective of how much time and sacrifice that coaching does take, that when something like this happens in somebody's family, you are better off taking a break from that and dealing with your family issue. Like I said, I don't think a lot of us have that perspective, have a problem with perspective. But it makes the Adam Gase story that you've heard before about how he boogied out of the delivery of his baby, to go meet Peyton Manning for a meeting. It kind of makes it, oh, gee, that's kind of the opposite, right? But I think most people really have an idea of family first, and Blake Anderson, I think, had shown it.
This is SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue our NFL previews. It's the Tennessee Titans' turn today, as it is AFC South week. Like I said earlier, I think the Titans, and again, I don't like the description of vanilla, but they're not a super exciting football team. Mike Vrabel, though, is an exciting coach. Early 40s, comes from the Patriots. He brings a little bit of the Patriot way into Nashville. Also, the defense last year was really good. Really good. It was one of the top scoring defenses in the league. The issue with the Titans have been durability. They have an often injured, a lot of injured players. Players are getting hurt, including Marcus Mariota. The second thing is inconsistency. They can score some points and then get shut out, which at the NFL, it's hard to get shut out. All right. I think the Titans did it twice last year where they didn't put up any points. Vrabel is a guy, and you probably, if you paid attention to some of their games last season, he went for it on fourth down against the Chargers in London. I mean, he had a 2-point conversion against the Chargers in London. He went for it on fourth down against the Texans on a Monday night game. He's a gambler. He's willing to put the money on the line and go out there and, you know, risk losing a game to take a win if he can get it. But this season is going to be about Marcus Mariota. He's going into his fifth year. I remember, and I'll go back to that draft, the Winston draft, where I thought the Titans were set at quarterback with Zach Mettenberger. And I thought that they were going to go with Zach Mettenberger and go, okay, look, we need a lot of pieces. We have the number two pick. We need a lot of other pieces. We'll be fine at that position. Let's look around and get maybe trade that two pick for more picks, etc. I was surprised that they went with Marcus Mariota. But what they lacked was a face of the franchise, a guy at that position. Right, they were looking for a quarterback that could be the guy that sells tickets, and Mariota sold tickets and sold excitement. The problem is he's had four different coordinators since he's been in the league, and this has been a topsy-turvy Titans team that has not had consistency. When we were talking to our Steelers guy, I made the point that since I moved to Nashville in 2011, I think there's been four head coaches with the Titans in that period of time. Right. When Jeff Fisher got let go, there was Ken Wisenhunt, there was Mike Mularkey, there was Mike Munchak. I don't remember a particular order of it. And now we're talking about Mike Vrabel. So there's been four different faces of the Tennessee Titans over the last, 7 years or so, 7-8 years or so. I mean, and it's not doing Marcus Mariota any good to be running through different systems. He is looking for a money year. Right. This is his money year where he is going to get paid serious money. But they're not 100% sure about him. They know he's got leadership ability. He doesn't exactly have durability, but he has a problem with accuracy. This is a make or break year. But the defense is really good. And here's the thing, too. It's going to get better when Jeffrey Simmons, their first-round draft pick, comes away and comes healthy from a torn ACL. He suffered that in February, and the Titans still drafted him, knowing that this year he wasn't going to play. Looking at the future, the guy has so much talent and was so good at Mississippi State that they were willing to draft a first rounder that can't help them this year, that can help them going forward. Right? And I think that's fantastic. But at the same time, Derrick Henry's got to stay healthy. He was great coming on strong late last season. Right, there's a lot of issues with the Titans if you're going to be competitive in a competitive division. And I'm not talking about – this is one of those examples. And I mean, the AFC South could be one of those examples. And I've used the line a lot to talk about conferences in football where just because you beat each other up in conference play doesn't mean it's good. Like, parity doesn't equal excellence. It just equals parity. And that's the case in the AFC South. You might have the Colts and the Texans and the Titans and the Jaguars all beating each other up for the division, but it doesn't mean any of the teams are really good. It just means that they're in a division where the competitiveness of it is causing you to rise and fall with the tide. Right. And that's the case with Tennessee. I don't care who wins the division. Unless somebody wins this division with 13 wins and really shows that they're head and shoulders above everybody else, I don't think anybody coming out of the South is going to be that great coming in. Now, I look at the Texans and I see, okay, that could possibly be the case. And the Colts, if Andrew Luck is healthy, but the Titans aren't one of those teams. The Titans just aren't, right? The Titans are going to have bad losses and they're going to have some good wins. That's pretty much the MO of this team. They'll have some games where you'll say, you know what? I think they're getting better. I think they're improving. I think they're a threat. And then the next week they'll disappoint you. Right? They're going to win some games where they'll shock you, and they're going to lose some games that they probably should win. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams in the NFL, because that's kind of the way the NFL is. But with the Titans, it really is the MO. That's the big complaint here, is that there just doesn't feel like once you get a handle on this team, it changes. Right? Once you feel like you know this team, it's different. And that's why you have all the coaching changes. Right? They just haven't settled on a system. They haven't figured out. Like, Ken Wisenhunt should have been a no-brainer, but he wasn't, right? Mike Munchak was a pretty good coach, and I think it was Mike Mularkey that they wanted to extend, but he wanted to keep some assistance, and they said no, and he ended up saying, no, I'm not coming back. So they haven't really settled in on a long-term solution to the Mariota problem on offense, which is find him a system that he's comfortable with and let him play through that. But look, we analyze these teams, we break down these teams in strengths and weaknesses, and when you look at the Titans, this is why I use the term vanilla. You don't see a 3-13 football team. They're too talented for that. Their defense is too good for that. But you also don't see a 13-3 team or a 12-4 team.
No,
in the middle of the pack, and that's not where you really want to be.
I think what you said last hour, you're looking at a 7-9, 8-8, 9-7 team.
That's about it. That's about
and
it.
That might be good enough to get out of the AFC South, but it's not going to be good enough to advance deep into the playoffs.
And remember, last year they were in a win and get in type of situation, and they lost their final game of the season. So they had a chance. They were 9-7 last year, and they had a chance to make the playoffs. They couldn't close out the season. They ended up losing to the Colts on that final game of the year, and Mariota didn't play, got hurt, and so they were done, and they went 9-7. But you know, like I said, on the flip side of it all, it's a football team that has these moments where. You know, like they lost to Buffalo last year. You know, they were better than Buffalo. Buffalo was kind of a rebuilding. I know they were coming off a playoff team, but Buffalo admitted that they were rebuilding. They broke that team down. They realized that the team that went to the playoffs the year before was not the team that was going to be built for success. And they broke that down. And the Titans went on the road and lost to them. Then they were shut out by Baltimore, right? Then they lost in London. You know, they beat Jacksonville in a 9-6 game. I mean, they had a hard time scoring sometimes. And then they had a hard time putting, sometimes they had a hard time with putting points on the board as well. So, I mean, it's just, it's one half dozen or the other with that team. So I just don't see any reason to be overly excited. But again, let me tell you something. And again, I got a few friends that are Titans fans who feel the exact same way. It shouldn't be a lost season of mediocrity when that division could be won with a 10-6 record. And they could get a 10-6 record. I mean, they almost had it last year. They're not a football team that is in the basement. They're good enough to win a lot of games, just not enough games. But it all stems from Mariota, and it's amazing to me here going into the fifth year that there is still a gee, I wonder if we could do better. I wonder if there's another guy out there that we can get.
It's the only thing I guess that saves Mariota in that storyline is the fact that Tampa Bay is doing the same thing with Winston.
Yeah, same thing, right?
Both those quarterbacks, 1-2, each of them are still, you know, each team is still respectively going, did we make the right choice?
No, we gave it a good shot, right? I mean, Mariota, when he got drafted, and as I said, I thought they would trade the pick. I really thought that they would trade the pick and shore up other things. But I'm not kidding. The second they drafted him, I realized why they did it. His face was on billboards very quickly. His face was in commercials very quickly. They marketed him really heavy, as you would expect. When you have when you get a quarterback is the most marketable guy on your team when you get a new quarterback. But I realized, oh, they didn't do this really with Jake Locker. They didn't really do this with Mettenberger. They didn't really do the last one. I think that they really did in terms of really, you know, made him the face of the franchise was Vince Young, right? I mean, they had him for a period of time, right? I mean, since the late Steve McNair had this team consistently going to the playoffs with big records, 13-3, winning the division, going to the AFC championship game. They have not found that real franchise quarterback that can take them to the next place. And that's why McNair is still, so beloved even in his passing, is that he really had this team, you know, in the Super Bowl, playing four Super Bowls, et cetera. And it's been a long time. It's been a long time since they've had that kind of level of success. You know, I remember one of my friends, Cecil Lammy, who's a football guru. I remember when I was moving from Denver to Nashville and him and I were talking and he said, you know, I like Jake Locker. I think he'll be fine. I said, when you get there, you know, you'll see. But I think there's some things to like about Locker. And I liked Locker too. And he didn't pan out either. And a lot of people said, well, he struggled with the system. That's an excuse people use if they like a guy who's failed. I think if you're a good quarterback, you'll figure it out. I mean, you cannot blame somebody's success or failure in this league solely on the system. That has something to do with it. But also, too, I think if you're a good quarterback, your skills shine out. And teams are smart enough to know that. A good GM would see that. A good GM, if you had a kid who could really sling it around and you knew he had the skills, he had the size, he had the agility, the athletic ability to play in the league, and then you were also seeing the way he threw the football and how he threw the football and the system wasn't working, trust me, a good GM would see that and change systems. Would probably say, listen, either you're going to change to fit this guy or you're going to have to walk. I don't care who you are. But Locker never fit out either. People are excited about Derrick Henry because of what he did late in the season. I mean, this was Deion Lewis's team in the beginning, and then Henry started emerging, started picking up more carries, started running the ball a lot better, and really had that breakout game against Jacksonville on that Thursday night. Remember, he had the 99-yard run. He had like 240 yards on the ground. And then, you know, he followed it up with some good game against the Giants. I mean, he had a lot of, a lot of people saying, okay, they've really got the running game situated. But again, nothing screams, hey, watch out, 11-5, 12-4. It just they're just not that team. All right, we will be talking to Teresa Walker from the AP in Nashville on the Titans as we continue previews. This week's the AFC South. We'll continue with Jacksonville and Houston later on this week. It is SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
This is Mike Herzing, Let's Talk Wheels, an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. You know, one of the great things about a new car is the new car warranty. You've got the company's promise that for the first so many years or so many miles, they're going to fix anything that wasn't supposed to break. But don't forget that you have to maintain that car to keep the warranty. New vehicles still need checkups or schedule maintenance. Doesn't matter who does the work, you are a qualified shop. You have to do it and be able to prove that you did it if they ask. I can't tell you how many folks I've talked to that have been turned down for repairs just because they couldn't prove that they had followed the maintenance schedule. Folks, you got to play the game. Keep the proof for no warranty. Just like saving receipts for oil changes. Even if you do your own oil changes, save your receipts when you buy the parts. Write down the date and the mileage when you did it. Keep your records and play the game. This is Mike Herzing, Let's Talk Wheels. We're brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. For more tips, go to the new letstalkwheels.com. That's the new letstalkwheels.com.
Some people spend the summer hiding from the heat, but not you. You spend your summers outside, exploring all of life's adventures, and there's only one way to make sure your summer lives up to that. Experience it in a Jeep SUV during the summer of Jeep. Whether you're exploring your city in a Jeep Wrangler, the 2019 Motor Trend SUV of the Year, or scaling summits in a Jeep Cherokee with best-in-class 4x4 capability, maybe you'll spend summer finding the perfect view in a Jeep Compass with its available panoramic dual-pane sunroof. Or maybe you'll take an impromptu beach trip in a Jeep Grand Cherokee, the most awarded SUV ever. For great deals on the best-selling SUV brand, visit your dealer during the summer of Jeep. Based on Jeep Cherokee offering 2-speed power transfer unit, PTU, rear locking axle, low range 4x4 capability, exclusive Jeep Select Terrain with 5 settings, auto snow, sand, mud, rock, sport, Jeep Grand Cherokee has received more awards in its lifetime than any other SUV. Based on total 2018 SUV sales in the Ford's light vehicle segment, Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, this hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, so you were talking about the asteroid?
Yeah.
What is we were talking about this asteroid. And in Good, Bad, and the Dumb. And then you said, oh, boy, I got more information on this. You do not want to know.
No, I got one little
important
nugget.
So let's reset
it
in case somebody didn't hear us last hour. You said in The Good, the Bad, and the Dumb, and it was the bad, that there's this asteroid that's going to come over to the Earth in 10 years, and it's going to pass within 19,000
miles. 19,000
miles
of
which
us.
Is very close, because you said satellites are about 22.
Yeah. So it's passing underneath most of our satellites.
That's not a good thing.
No.
Now, I was saying that anytime an asteroid, if I hear an asteroid that close, I think even though it may just pass, I just feel my gut tells me something bad is going to happen.
Well, I'm going to throw a little salt on the wound.
Okay.
Tony.
Go ahead.
You predict what day of the week this asteroid will pass?
Oh, no.
In 2029.
It's going to be on a Friday.
And can you guess the number?
Friday the 13th?
Really? All days, right? Yeah.
God, it's amazing how they can do that.
It's supposed to pass by April 13th, 2029. And yes, that will be a Friday.
That's amazing how they can calculate all that stuff.
I know.
It's space. It's not like it's land. It's they know how far it is.
No,
they know how fast it's traveling.
And they said one of the other things to note that if the asteroid swings by in just the wrong way, Earth's gravitational nudge could set it up for an impact in 2036.
Oh no.
So if we nudge it just the right way, because right now in 2036 it's supposed to pass again as it's exiting our solar system.
So this is like an insect that you just can't get rid of. You just like go away.
Yeah, it'll see what it's doing. It's going to cruise by. It's going to cruise around the sun and then come back, and we're going to come near it again. But when the return trip is supposed to be like millions of miles away, unless we nudge it just a little bit.
Got it. So do you think this is something worth investing, NASA?
Maybe.
God, that's so weird.
Maybe start getting Bruce Willis and his team together.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know the first thing about drilling. No, because we're NASA.
Yeah.
Okay, we know a lot about space, which you don't know anything about, but we don't know your business because we're not in your business, Bruce Willis. What a dumb line. Y'all don't know anything about drilling. No, that's why you're here.
Drilling's a science.
Drilling's a science, man. Seriously, that would be like if I brought, when I brought in the AC guys, and they were like, you guys don't know anything about air conditioning.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I'm paying you a boatload of money to come fix this. Yes, driller, go on the asteroid and drill so we can drop a nuclear bomb. How about this? Our expertise is getting you there. How about that? By the way, is this considered, I don't know if they've written this, is this considered one of those death asteroids, like all life, like dinosaur killing asteroid?
No.
Or is it like if it lands, it creates a crater,
heard,
it could be problems?
No, it's about the size of a football field.
Oh, that's okay. Remember the one, okay, again, Mr. Movie Guy. Was it Armageddon where the asteroid was the size of Texas? Which one of those movies was where the asteroid was the size of Texas?
I think maybe it was Armageddon.
I have a feeling Billy Bob Thornton said that, and that would be Armageddon.
Because Armageddon was an asteroid. Deep Impact, it was a comet.
Right. So, yeah. And that was the size of Manhattan. One of them was the size of Manhattan, and the other one was the size of Texas. The size of Texas one was so terrifying. Like, Texas is a big state. But this one's the size of a football field. So if it lands, it might create a big crater. But I don't think we're all going to die.
I think it could wipe out a city.
Yeah, that would be awful. And by the way, if they can predict when it's going to land, they can predict where it's going to land.
Exactly. And if they can do that, then all right. So here we go. The size of it. It's roughly the size of the Empire State Building.
It's still big.
It's a big.
It's going to be coming in at, 25,000 miles per hour.
25,000 miles per hour. Yeah.
Yeah, that's enough to.
Yeah, it could do some damage.
Yeah.
And then if we nudge it in 2036 when it makes its return trip, we could really do some damage then.
This sounds like another disaster movie. We tried to nudge it. It wouldn't nudge.
Exactly. Now we have 5 years.
Exactly.
Or no, wait, I'm not doing math.
You know what made those movies so terrifying is, like, okay, you could watch Twister, right, and go, well, I don't live in a tornado zone. I live in a tornado zone. But you if you live somewhere, you're like, I don't live in a tornado zone. You can watch a tsunami movie and be like, I live inland. I live in Denver, Colorado. And I'm not going to be worried about a tsunami. You can watch a volcano movie and go, I'm not really near a volcano, so I'm good. But an asteroid, that movie was scary because it didn't matter where you lived. Both scenarios were everyone's going to die. Remember they said the asteroid would hit, then there would be like enough dirt in the air and the sun would be blocked and all the vegetation was going to die. This was terrifying. I mean, this was Hollywood at its best. They created two movies that you could go, yeah, that could happen. I could totally see that happening. In fact, one is probably heading for us right now and they're not telling us. We don't know. It was pretty good. Those were good movies. No, I don't think was Armageddon a good movie, really?
No.
I don't think it was. Deep Impact seemed to be better.
What I like about Armageddon, I think there are better scenes in Armageddon.
Yeah, I do too.
Like the whole doctor psychiatric scene is one of the best out of all disaster movies.
I agree. But the glad to see you, boy, I don't know if that was a good scene.
No, that's not a good
wasn't
scene
Bruce
at all.
Willis' finest moment. Titans next.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's AFC South week as we continue our NFL previews and the Tennessee Titans on the clock today. Teresa Walker joins us on a Progressive Insurance Hotline. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at Progressive.com. She's from the Associated Press. How are you, Teresa?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to get a feeling for last year. It's the first year for Mike Vrabel. They don't make the playoffs, but they do play a game where they could have gotten into the playoffs the last week of the season. They didn't make it, but was there a sense that last year was successful, not successful? How did they quantify last season's 9-7 record?
Well, not successful. Mike Vrabel has made it clear that while 9-7 is better than 500, it's good, but it wasn't good enough. And that's kind of been the goal this offseason, trying to find a way to squeeze out that little bit of extra to be a better team, to try to win it. You know, the goal was to win a division title and get into the playoffs and try to play for a Super Bowl. They didn't do that last year, so not happy. But as you mentioned, last year, weird situation. I mean, think about it. Mike Vrabel opens his career coaching in the longest game in NFL history,
right,
at least since the merger, in Miami. Loses his three-time Pro Bowler, Delanie Walker, in that game. Also, you know, Marcus Mariota's favorite target in his career. And, yeah, that kind of, then his coordinator missed a key game in Indianapolis because he went to the hospital. You know, that was just some of the strange things. A veteran wide receiver who was expected to kind of lead that receiver group, Rishard Matthews, asked to be released, had only had three catches coming off of the off-season injury. And so it was just one strange thing after another. So you would think that maybe the Titans got that out of the system last year for Mike Vrabel.
What makes Vrabel different in terms of as a coach? I mean, ever since Fisher was let go, it has been a kind of a revolving door with coaches from Wisenant, Malarkey, Munchak. Now Vrabel, is he a different type of coach than they've gone after in the past? Or is he another guy they just are hoping works out?
Kind of a mix. Now, John Robinson, the current GM, you know, he started at the New England Patriots. And yes, they hired Mike Vrabel because, you know, he's that guy who's seen by an awful lot of people as that next great coach because of his background, having won three Super Bowls with Belichick in New England. He's also, you know, started his career with Bill Cowher in Pittsburgh, coached at Ohio State under Urban Meyer, and then with the Houston Texans under Bill O'Brien. And, you know, he's seen as maybe being that guy, and that's the reason why, you know, everyone's been going over after trying to get that next Belichick disciple. Well, they think that they've got one who's maybe along that same path, but, you know, with a little bit maybe different experience, not just simply in the Belichick system. So, you know, yes, they are trying to hopefully clone and create, you know, when they introduced him last year, they made it very clear. We'd like something that is so successful that instead of it being called the Patriot way, it's called the Titan way someday. So, you know, they are trying to tap into that, but you know what? That's exactly what somebody was trying to do when they hired Ken Wisenhunt and gave him a 5-year deal, outbidding Detroit trying to get him here. And, you know, now Mike Munchak, you know, Jeff Fisher and the Titans parted late enough that, you know, they looked around and it's like, you know what, let's go with Mike Munchak. And, you know, a guy who, you know, unfortunately for him, they hired him the year of the lockout. He didn't get a chance to even talk to his players until the last week of July. So, not an easy situation to start your tenure under as a head coach.
Teresa Walker, again, AP in Nashville, joins us to talk Tennessee Titans as we continue our NFL previews. Marcus Mariota, this is like one of those make-or-break years, right? This is the money year. What did they like from him, but what does he need to work on, and what is he still struggling with?
Well, the one thing that they have said over and over this offseason is they want him to just be himself, be aggressive. You know, he kind of dove into the, you know, flipped into the end zone Saturday night for a 2-point conversion against New England. And fans are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Teammates are like, don't do that again. Well, I asked Mike Vrabel about it, and he's like, We want him playing aggressive. We want him playing free. That's been the one thing. Go out there and just play. I don't think they really want him, you know, thinking too much, you know, to put it bluntly. They just want him to go out there and just compete and be the guy in a way that he was at Oregon, just going out there trying to make plays. Now, to help him do that, you're absolutely right. Contract year, he's making $20.9 million this year, but this, he doesn't have anything after this year. He's got that in common with at least 14 or 13 other players on this Titans roster, including Derrick Henry. But they went out and they got Adam Humphries. They drafted A.J. Brown out of Ole Miss. They bolstered the offensive line, signing Roger Saffold away from the Rams. So they have tried their best to surround him with possibly the best talent he's had as he goes into his fifth and deciding year in the NFL.
We get paralysis by analysis sometimes when we overthink some things, but the idea of Marcus Mariota in this league since his arrival in the NFL under so many different coordinators and even head coaches, has that plagued him? Has that been a problem, or are we overvaluing that?
Well, you ask him about it and he'll downplay it. You know,
sure.
His job is just go out. That said, how can it not? I mean, it's been different voices, you know, different, you know, coaches. I mean, it's just been a revolving door there. That's the one reason why Mike Vrabel, when he looked around trying to replace when Matt LaFleur went from coordinator to head coach in Green Bay, you know, trying to get some sort of continuity, he promoted Arthur Smith from tight ends coach to coordinator. Arthur Smith, as a tight ends coach, had been really involved in, you know, pass and run blocking with tight ends. So, and he's been here throughout Marcus Mariota's tenure. Arthur Smith's a guy who, you know, Vrabel's now his fourth different coach. You know, so he's in a similar boat that he's seen the different changes. Now, he's tried to change this offense, but kept all the language the same. And when you ask about what they're going to do differently on offense, you don't get a whole lot of questions or, you know, a whole lot of details and responses, but they make it clear that they want to try to attack teams, and it seems like Arthur Smith might be a bit of an aggressive kind of play caller, at least based on what we've seen on the first two preseason games. But that voice, that's somebody that Marcus Mariota knows that voice, feels very comfortable walking into his office and talking about what they're doing on offense together. So, you know, they're trying to minimize and reduce that because, yes, this is a crucial year. They've got to know what they can get out of Marcus Mariota and if he can help them get from that good to great.
We saw Derrick Henry last year, especially late last year, really pour it on in those big runs and those big numbers. Is this a workhorse back? I mean, in terms of his production, how do they see the running game under this offense going into 2019?
Well, the one thing they've made clear is they want Derrick Henry to start this year and play the entire season the way he did in December. You know, he was second in the AFC in rushing and I think third in rushing touchdowns. 625 yards in the month of December, and in the final from weeks 9 through 17, his 6 yard per carry average led the NFL. Well, they want that the whole season. And, you know, he kind of struggled coming out of the gate last year, and, you know, they were talking about trying to maybe unload him at a certain point. And he had a talk with Eddie George, and Eddie kind of reminded him, it's like, dude, your next carry could be your last. And, you know, that kind of mindset adjustment, whatever, it all worked. And Derrick Henry started running like the back that, you know, won a Heisman Trophy at Alabama. And so, yes, the Titans have made it very clear. We want that guy starting September 8th in Cleveland and for an entire year. And you know, Deion Lewis, yes, they still like him very, very much. They want him to be part of that mix. But the guy who's going to be starting in Cleveland is going to be Derrick Henry.
Defensively, not surprisingly, but I don't know if how many people paid attention. Defensively, they were pretty good. They're one of the best scoring defenses in the league. What does it look like this year? Have they shored up the secondary? Because I know that has been a problem.
Well, every starter is back in that secondary, and pretty much everybody there is getting big money, with the exception of third-year cornerback Adoree Jackson. They made Kevin Byard the highest-paid safety right before training camp. He leads the NFL in interceptions combined over the last two seasons. So, yeah, they were number three in scoring defense, sixth against the pass. Where they struggled most was in that pass rush. They only got two sacks combined from Derek Morgan and Brian Aracco last year, outside backer. Both of those guys retired, and they've got Harold Landry in his second year. They signed Cameron Wake from Miami to plug into the other spot. And on paper, it looks like they're going to have a chance to get more sacks. And if they can get a few more sacks, they're going to be in position to be even better. This is the second year in Dean Pease's scheme. He came back after getting a little health issue fixed after the season. And, you know, yeah, they believe that they can do even better. And, yeah, keep an eye on that secondary. I think if they can get a better pass rush, they may be able to improve on what they did last year. And they weren't too bad. Six against pass, third scoring defense, where they've got to shore it up, get more sacks, and defend the run better.
Not to kind of credit the secondary, but if you don't have a pass rush, you'd really have no – the secondary can't really do much else if you can't get to the quarterback and force him to throw.
Exactly. It's one reason why they drafted Jeffrey Simmons at 19 overall, even though they know they're going to have to be patient while he recovers from an ACL. So, yeah, that's the thing. Try to get a little bit more pressure on that quarterback, and keep an eye on the inside linebackers. Rashawn Evans was the first-round pick a year ago. He's starting on the inside next to Jayon Brown. Two very young linebackers, but with a lot of speed and a lot of attitude.
So give me an idea of where you see this division now, because if you give Jacksonville a boost now with Nick Foles, and you know they weren't that far away from going to the AFC Championship not that long ago, but if you throw them now with Nick Foles, if everyone's healthy, and I know it's a big if with Andrew Luck, this is one of those divisions where, you know, 10-6 could win it and everyone's kind of beating each other up a little bit. Are the Titans a team that kind of can emerge out of that?
Absolutely. As I mentioned, there's 14 players in the final year of their deals. They're all playing for that next contract.
Right.
So that can be a motivation alone. But you're right. This division was the only division in all of football last year to have three teams with winning records. And, you know, and Jacksonville was the odd man out. And now they fix their quarterback situation. So, yeah, this may be, again, the most competitive division. And the team that keeps their quarterback healthiest for the longest in most games, that might be the thing that pushes a team to the division title.
Teresa, great stuff. Really appreciate it. Hope to get you on during the season. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
You got it. Teresa Walker, AP in Nashville on the Titans, and basically reiterated what we've been saying about this division, which is, look, stay healthy. Everyone's got a shot. Really, everyone should have a shot. I should say should, because we still look at Indianapolis, and I have no idea what's going on with Luck, right? But again, this is all on paper right now. Until we get to the season, we know what these teams look like. We know what they've got. If we have an idea of what these teams are going to be going into the season, this is a division where, God, pick, right? I mean, look, the Texans are, you know, really good. The Titans can be good. They got a pretty good defense. It should get better. You got Indianapolis with Andrew Luck and a great offensive line that's giving him time. They didn't let him get sacked for five straight games last year. You've got Jacksonville and Nick Foles, you're expecting a resurgence, you know, a little bit of a comeback there, and yet you don't see an upper echelon team. When we talk of the AFC, right, isn't this the division we leave out? And it has been. I mean, I'm sorry, but that has been. We talk about the Patriots. We talk about the Steelers. We even throw in the Ravens, right, into that mix. We talk about the Chargers, and we talk about the Chiefs. There are teams that are built for Super Bowl or bust. Give me a team in the AFC South that is Super Bowl or nothing, right? She pointed out, Mike Vrabel thought it was a failure because they didn't make the playoffs or win the Super Bowl. But all coaches say that. But in reality, I got to tell you, a 9-7 out of the gate, first time head coach, I'll take it right now. If I'm a Titans fan and I'm looking long term, I'll take it. Because there's nothing worse when you get a new coach knowing that there's going to be an adjustment period, right? If he's stripping everything down and building it back up, and more likely you'll struggle with a couple of things, but it's an admission that you've got to go in a different direction, and maybe that direction takes a while. Well, they went 10-7 and had a chance to make the playoffs in a division where 12-4, 13-3 wasn't needed. Right? Ron and I talked about this all last year. All last year. The team no one was paying attention to was the Chargers. Right? And the Chargers had to keep pace with a team, the Kansas City Chiefs, was winning double-digit games. Right? And yet, in the AFC South, right, 10-6. 10-6 was going to win it. And it could have been 9-7. Right? It could have been 9-7. Plus or minus here or there. And the Colts had to win the division by winning 9 of their last 10 games. Right? So look at that division and say, nothing goes screaming out of there. I'm waiting for Houston to pop, but nobody's popping out of that division. Doesn't mean they can't be a threat. Playoffs, anything can happen. But we're going to do this all week. We're going to talk about this kind of all week about how just where is the super team out of this division? There isn't any. There just isn't any. All right? But again, it does, and there isn't a bottom feeder either. At least there shouldn't be. It is SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. We'll give our final thoughts on the Titans as we wrap up our NFL preview on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Went a little long with Teresa Walker, but she had good stuff. This hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Final thoughts on the Titans. Again, nothing really. It's not exciting. It's not an exciting team. Look, you know what the problem with me is? We did the Colts yesterday. The Colts have Andrew Luck. And if Andrew Luck is playing well, they can win the Super Bowl, right? They can go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. But the Titans don't really have that. Marcus Mariota, if he goes to a Super Bowl, it's going to be one of those, hey, this is a fun year. It's kind of a bonus.
To Joe Flacco.
Yeah, right. That's a perfect way to put that, right? Let me ask you real quick. If Deshaun Watson got the Texans to the Super Bowl, the defense played well, right? I don't think it would be shocking, right? Because no. Doesn't it feel like the Texans have been on the cusp of being really good for a while?
Yes.
The Titans have never been on the cusp of being good in the last few years. They've never been on the, man, just wait, one more piece and it's Super Bowl. They just haven't.